G'day everybody and welcome to today's podcast, where we will chat with Charmaine van der Merwe more on the topic of assessment culture. This is LZ LaRue, and with me,
Annelie Arendorf.
Let's talk transformative assessment. So today we have Charmaine van der Merwe with us in the studio. Charmaine, warm welcome.
Thank you, LZ.
Charmaine is working as an advisor at the Center for Teaching and Learning here at Stellenbosch University. And maybe Charmaine, just to give some context on what is your focus as an advisor at the Center for Teaching and Learning?
Well, LZ, at the center, we obviously advise on different higher education issues around teaching, learning and assessment in different faculties and centrally. But I have a specific interest in assessment and advancing assessment practices that enhance learning at the university. So I am the coordinator of our assessment short course and am involved in different other projects around assessment, assessment research and so on.
I've heard you're actually busy with a PhD at the moment. Would you like to share more on what your topic's about or the focus area?
Yes, LZ, I'm registered for my PhD. My focus is on the literacies lecturers and students need to incorporate more self-assessment, since this is seen as a practice that can enhance students being more active in the assessment process, which ultimately leads or possibly lead to assessment practices that's more focused on learning.
Oh, fascinating. I think there's a big need for that. So thank you for embarking on that ginormous journey. So maybe getting into today's theme for today's podcast, all about assessment culture. Now, it is a quite vague topic, I guess. What is meant by assessment culture?
Yes, well, is LZ... when just looking generally at what culture is, it's around the ingrained knowledges and beliefs and practices that is shared within a community or a society or an institution. And the assessment culture then refers to the embedded values and beliefs around what should assessment look like, how should assessment be practiced at the university. And it's often those things that we don't even think about. It is the way that things are done at the institution without it even being explicitly stated or without it even being questioned. So it's the way that we are used to things being done, and often we believe that that is the way that it should be done. Like, for instance, having exams. I think we were all exposed to being assessed as students and as lecturers. We assessed our students, and we often think that there must be an exam with a final mark because that is the way that we can say that our students are have the knowledge or they have the specific...
They've mastered objectives
or what you want them to have mastered in your module, and without a mark, you can't say that.
Yeah, Charmaine, since you opened the door on the exam thing from literature, because I know having being registered for a PhD, you're quite well read at this point in time. From literature, what is the position on exams? And I think we have this innate understanding that that is how we know that students have mastered, as you said, that they can display the outcomes that we're after. Are there any positions in literature that either support or don't support that?
I think before focusing too much on literature that supports marks or not, it goes a little bit further into what the purpose of our assessments are. And I think for the last 20, 30 years, there has been a paradigm shift in higher education towards teaching practices that are more learning-centered. And when you apply that to assessment, generally, when you have an exam with marks, we see that as assessment of learning or summative assessments. And the purpose of that assessment is to judge the student and to generate a mark and to say, okay, this student has 50 or 70 or 80 or whatever percent. And we value that and say, and not just us at the institution, it's also valued by the community, by industries. And often the student with the highest mark is said to be the student that should get access to postgraduate studies and the student who should get the job out there. But when you look at the literature around assessment of learning or the assessment, the summative assessments, there is a lot of criticism that it possibly leads to learning strategies in students that will help them to get the best marks, but not necessarily to get the best understanding of the subject matter. So the mark attached to that assessment does not necessarily say that the student has learned. And that's the criticism around summative assessments. It possibly leads to students' learning strategies that's not conducive to a deeper learning approach or a deeper understanding of the subject matter. And therefore, over the last couple of years, a lot of research papers have focused on assessment strategies or assessment practices that's more focused on assessments for learning, which is also our formative assessments, where the generation of marks or grades are not the sole purpose, but generating feedback to the students so that they can see from the feedback what it is that they know and do not know and how they should improve to get to completion of the course, to get to an understanding of the different outcomes. And more recently, also focus on more sustainable purposes of assessment, where it is assessment as learning, where students learn throughout the process of the assessment while being engaged in the assessment to judge their own work, to judge their own capabilities, and thereby learning how to compare their own work with different sources, get feedback from different sources, which is an important skill for life after graduation. So if we look at our assessment practices where we have tests and exams, we teach students to be ready for a work, for the world of work, where they're not going to have weekly tests and exams to tell them if they are on the right path. So shouldn't that encourage us to change our practices so that students learn through the process of assessment what are the important skills for life beyond graduation? Because we don't just want our students to know content knowledge and be able to recite that in a test. We want to prepare them for the life beyond university.
Yeah, and if we think of life beyond university and students engaging with life beyond the safe space, hopefully, as a university, where it's actually supposed to be this beautiful safe space where learning can happen. In other words, where you can make mistakes, where you have opportunity to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes, so to speak, to become better, to grow, to evolve, to expand. And it's almost like the tests and exams, if that is your assessment culture in an institution, then it sort of just brings a narrow-minded view on, this is just noughts and crosses. It's fails or pass. And then it almost, to me, it almost says something about, if that is the culture, then the question is also, well, how much of what happens in there is actually focused on learning, and how bigger space or safer space are created in the institution conducive to learning. And that brings back to what you also mentioned about the formative assessments, like the word says, to form, to help form, right? And providing that feedback to students continuously and not just at the end of when it's like, oh, sorry, you didn't make it, or well done, according to the marks you make it. But what was actually learned, right?
So what's also important in this conversation is to realize that And you see it in the literature and also at our institution is there's this constant tension between wanting to promote assessment practices that are for learning and assessment practices for accountability purposes.
And do we also find that a lot of that tension created by the accountability component are also external influences, like from probably the Council on Higher Education or professional boards, that sort of thing? And that also enhances that tension that's between the two. So it's actually more than just a university culture that needs to shift. It goes beyond that, actually.
Yeah, so the culture is not just about the beliefs of the institution or whoever is in the institution, but also the different stakeholders that will employ the graduates from the institution. So if we think about, as you say, the different accrediting bodies, for instance, different professional bodies, what do they look at? What are the types of entrance exams that they have for professionals? If it's very test orientated and marks orientated, and as mentioned before, the student with the highest marks get entrance. If that is what is believed to be the way of doing it, it's very difficult to change that.
So, Charmaine, then bringing this back to, I mean, we are talking about cultures, we're still talking about the cultures, but we can then, I guess, from this conversation take that a lot of cultures, exactly because of this tension and maybe some unfounded beliefs inside and outside institutions, are still largely centered around summative assessment of learning, being able to certify, being able to say. And we have this belief that if we have got multiple assessments with lots of marks that we're averaging out and getting weighted averages for and things like that, that then our results are valid. Would that be a good summary of what's going on out there?
Yes, probably. And it's possibly also because that is the easiest way to then say that, yes, our students have reached a certain standard and we can send them out to the world to say, yes, they have graduated, they deserve this specific degree. But what's easiest is not necessarily the best. And one needs to look at what you want to achieve with the outcomes of your module and say, if I give the students this type of test or exam, can I with confidence say that they have achieved this? But unfortunately, there are other things that also play a role. If one just looks at what is in the literature around barriers around changing a culture. And also with our discussions with lecturers on the courses and in the workshops, logistical constraints. If I have a class of 2,000 students or even 300 students, it's just easier to give them an invigilated test with multiple choice questions where there's automatic marking and I can say, yes, I have tested them on a large amount of the content, and they got 50%, which is, for some other reason, generally accepted as acceptable to go out into the world. It's the easiest way.
So you mentioned the barriers to change. What would help culture change? How do we change culture? Do we have any examples or any advice from literature?
One of the first things is to understand the culture. So it's suggested to, because there's a lot of contextual factors that also influence culture. If one wants to change a specific aspect of the culture at the institution, one first needs to understand what are all those underlying beliefs and values and practices. And I think we are just at the point to undertake a study at this institution where we want to see what students and lecturers believe around the assessment practices at the institution.
There's also something about once you understand that, in your, or once you put focus on it, it sort of comes to the fore, right? So then you know basically what to work with. Then it's more prominent to see, I suppose, what can change, or then, you know, work around towards change. But if it's like just underneath or hidden or not, you know, not that visible, for lack of a better word, then you don't know what to work with. Then you don't, then, like you said, the culture actually becomes just something that's subconscious. So you just, it is the way it is, and that's the way it is. You don't even know what it is. But once you can find a way to to distill that or bring that to the fore, like you say, almost like, bubbling it to the surface, to see what those values or that intrinsic beliefs are, right, to understand then what is the culture, to understand then what can change.
Mm. Yeah, and I think, Charmaine, what you, now thinking about what Alzé just said, what you just said, we have at least two projects aimed at working towards this. The one is the bigger institutional assessment project aimed at understanding our culture at the moment, describing and understanding what it is and what makes it as it is. But then also your PhD, which I think will speak in, is a further element of trying to understand the extent to which something like self-assessment could be a useful tool given logistical constraints of all sorts of kinds.
Yes, and maybe linking to that, if we think about how to change something, we want to bring in the evidence, but we also want to understand how the evidence can be used to bring about change. And because I come from health sciences, a lot of the literature that I read is related to not just assessment in health science, but different aspects around it. And one of the metaphors that they use is how to get a patient, for instance, to change their lifestyle when they have a specific disease. And it's very difficult to do that if the patient has certain beliefs around their eating habits, for instance. So on the one side, the receiver, the patient, or the students or the lecturers, we need to understand what their beliefs are to see how to get them to change. But we also need to understand our own beliefs around it if we want to bring about change, and bring in the evidence from other institutions from around the world. We cannot ignore what is done around assessment practices, for instance, and just say that, okay, yes, we see in the literature, but it's not going to be applicable to our context. We can just ignore it in our context, but then take into consideration what is the context here and how will it work at this institution.
I'm thinking of another tension that pops up for me is, like you mentioned, we have been assessed a certain way during our studies, and we still find the same way of assessment is still happening. And I mean, I was at university 20 odd years ago, so, and I mean, before that and before that. So for eons, for years, it's been done the same way on the one side. The other part creating attention is we work with technology, which develops at rapid speed. And so almost like old ways of doing, this old assessment culture, old ways of doing, meet up with new technologies emerging, and where the two meet, it creates hectic tension at the moment. A lot of colleagues feel completely disrupted again by artificial intelligence, new ways of engaging with that, merging, etc., and almost finding themselves at a loss of what's happening. And could it be also that it could speak to that culture, that old assessment culture, that's just come along for many years and not transforming, not changing, actually being part of the dilemma that we are in? And maybe when the culture change, when the way that we assess change and we become aware of our beliefs, intrinsic beliefs and values regarding our assessment, and when we transform that there would be probably a more easy gel or collaboration between incorporating digital technologies with our assessment, for example. Yeah, that's just one other tension I was thinking of.
I think what you mentioned now, and we also see that in the literature, one of the biggest barriers to change is historical resistance to change. So if one thinks that no one wants to change, and that is just the way that it's been, it's going to be very difficult to convince your colleagues that you want to try out something new. And I think we and maybe this is now a new point, but we saw that during the COVID pandemic, where suddenly there was something that forced people to change the way that they think about assessment. And we were very optimistic that some of these things will be kept and people will continue doing it. But as soon as the opportunity was there, people went back to the old ways of assessing in an invigilated manner, because there were other things that popped up then around academic integrity, for instance. And so we reverted back to what was known and everyone felt comfortable with it, even though it might not necessarily be the best way of doing it. But it's, you want to go back to your comfort zone, and even if you have some ideas that it isn't the best way of doing it, you just go back to it because you don't want to be in that uncomfortable position of having to change.
Yeah, I think we can continue that conversation at length. I'm going to turn Alzette's point a little on its head and name the elephant in the room. So talking about digital technologies with artificial intelligence, such as ChatGPT becoming more freely available earlier in the year, it highlighted similar problems to what COVID did. And I think we are thinking the tension is with the digital technology, but I'm starting to see that digital technology as just a lens surfacing deeper fault lines or deeper issues in higher education. And this is exactly what this conversation with you, Charmaine, is about. We could continue it at length, I guess, talking about cultures, but thank you so much for coming here today and sharing with us. And I think what I'm taking with me, Alzette, I'd like to hear your stance as well, is that it culture needs to change from within and from without, and we need to understand first what is informing the culture as it is and why is it as it is, and then use the evidence out there to start working at changing it towards, I presume, a more learner-centered and learning-centered, rather, more learning-centered culture of assessment in our to align with our broader values of being learning-centered, right?
Yeah, spot on. And maybe just to add, and I think it also starts with a person, with each one of us, really reflecting on what are my values or beliefs around assessment. And it almost becomes the pebble in the pond. So when I sit with my beliefs and values and understand that and what infuses the way I approach assessment, then my understanding can ripple effect out to others around, colleagues, students, etc. And then, probably create this wave of transformation, actually, of assessment culture as it currently is. Yeah. Charmaine, any last words from you?
Yes, I'm currently reading a book on assessment as learning. And in one of the chapters, the author is more addressing the lecturer and not necessarily the student. And what comes out there is that the lecturers should trust the students to fail, to try out things and be comfortable in the situation where they are comfortable with failing so that they can learn from that. And perhaps we should also use that at the institution where we we can have a whole conversation about autonomy for lecturers and them being in the best position to decide what is best to teach and how to assess in the modules, but also give them the freedom to take risks and try out ways of assessing their students that might be different, but give that to them, trust them to see what would be best ways to challenge their students, because I think we need to challenge our students more, possibly also challenge our lecturers more to challenge the students, if that makes sense.
Beautiful. It does.
I'll say it, you would think we had told the discussants what to speak about, because I think this is the third time that this issue of allowing yourself to fail has come to the fore as well. A previous discussant, I think Armand Swart, mentioned epically failing with one of his alternative when he tried a new thing in assessment and a new approach. And then that difficult position of deciding whether you're going to abandon a new idea or you're going to work and see why it failed. So thank you. I think that's an important lesson for people to take along. For one, to allow yourself to fail on occasion, it's a good thing to model to our students. And also for us to generally allow those around us to sometimes fail. Tricky in assessment, especially if it's high stakes.
Fantastic. Thank you, Charmaine. Thank you for visiting us and sharing your amazing thoughts on the topic, and all the best also for your PhD and all the work that goes into that, and all the best for your future ventures on that.
Thank you, Alzit. Thank you, Anli.
Thank you, everybody, and look forward to chatting on the next topic. Have a fabulous day.